Then there's California, our podcast featuring members of the California State Senate Democratic Caucus in conversation about their lives, their legislative priorities, policies, and other related issues that help make California exceptional. From an eerily quiet and nearly empty state capitol building in Sacramento, I'm Brian Green. Over the past month, or even just the past week that already feels like a month, life around the state of California, the United States, and the world at large has changed drastically and continues to do so almost by the hour because of the coronavirus pandemic, COVID-19. Not even 3 months ago, we had no idea what the coronavirus was. And now the people of China, Italy, Spain, Germany, New York, Washington, every state in the United States, and especially California, have had to become armchair experts in sanitizing, disinfecting, social distancing, Zooming with their coworkers and classmates, and other personal and workplace strategies to protect themselves and their loved ones during the pandemic. And, when necessary, learning how to tap into and trust government services and leadership during these challenging and truly very heartbreaking times. Californians need to understand that what we do almost by the hour now, as communities, as human beings, directly impacts the extent to which COVID-19 spreads throughout our landscape. On this edition of Then There's California, we will talk with a state senator who represents a Northern California district whose residents have had no choice in the last few years but to become experts in the art of survival and vigilance in times of disaster and emergency, and with a respected California medical practitioner who has dedicated her career to being a resource for prevention and healing and an advocate for factual health and care information and stats on both a local and statewide level. State Senator Bill Dodd represents the 3rd Senate District in Northern California, including Napa, Solano, Sonoma, Yolo counties. Before being elected to the Senate, Bill Dodd served in the State Assembly, and prior to that, for 15 years, he was a member of the Napa County Board of Supervisors. Senator Dodd has invited to join him on this podcast one of Napa County's and California's most distinguished medical practitioners. From 2015 to early 2019, Dr. Karen Smith, MD, served as a state health officer and director of the California Department of Public Health under former Governor Jerry Brown. And prior to that, Dr. Smith was the public health officer for Napa County in Northern California. And since leaving her state service, so to speak, last year, Dr. Smith has been providing her medical expertise on a contract basis for numerous county public health departments across California. And I assume the senator and the doctor are both being role models for us all right now, working from home and practicing social distancing. I am very glad to have them both. Senator Dodd, Dr. Smith, welcome to Then There's California.
Thank you so much.
How are you doing, by the way? How are things going?
Well, I'll tell you, it's not lost on me how this is really impacting, you know, our small businesses and families. This is a tough time for a lot of families. We're making it. My wife and I are holding up here at home, but, working hard to try to do what we can.
Doctor, where are you right now? Are you in Napa County? How are things going with you?
I am, in fact, in Napa. I'm at my home working remotely. I do spend several days a week in Santa Clara County in the Emergency Operations Center helping with the response there. And I have been doing some work in Mendocino County as well. So I'm getting a really vivid picture of both the impact in a county like Santa Clara, which has been on the leading edge, unfortunately, of the pandemic, but also a very rural county like Mendocino and the sort of specific challenges that arise there. Very lucky to live in Napa, where we're beginning to see the impact in terms of cases, but have had a very proactive health department, which is working hard to make sure that we all stay safe.
You know, notwithstanding the lighthearted attitude about social distancing and all of the social media memes about hoarding toilet paper and having to be your child's school teacher, this new normal that all of us across the globe are dealing with, this is incomprehensible. It is terrifying. It has disrupted society on a global scale that no one alive has ever witnessed, and not to mention the whiplash effect on our economy, on our business communities, is just extraordinary. And I guess just to start this perhaps on a personal perspective, Senator Dodd, the Capitol's closed to the public right now. The legislature's on recess till after Easter at the earliest. This is a new normal for you, obviously, as a lawmaker and as a resident of your district. You're legislating from a distance, you and your colleagues, but your absence from Sacramento gives you the advantage to be right there in your district. How's everything going there?
Well, you've indicated that Napa's been through a lot of tough times over the last 10, 15 years, floods, fires, earthquakes. And, this is yet another really crisis point. But what happens with this type of event, this pandemic, is that everyone in your community is impacted in some way or another. Not only our community, but all the communities up and down the state of California, across the nation, and across the world. So you're right. This is something like we have never faced in our lives.
Doctor, as you say, you're in Napa County, but you have your focus, as you also said, on various communities in California. From your healthcare prism, that's with an M, prism, how is California faring in these uncertain cataclysmic times?
Well, the thing about something like a pandemic is that it's never homogeneously happening. And it's because it's really all about people, and it's about people intersecting with people. And so I think there are parts of California that, where for residents, it feels like they're really not being impacted at all because they haven't had a case, or they've had only cases of individuals who came into the county from a known area of impact. There are other parts of the state, like Santa Clara County, increasingly the larger counties in Southern California, where the impact is really being felt. And the importance of everyone and every community really paying attention to the social distancing measures, the stay-at-home measures, is especially important when you don't really think you have the virus in your community, because the cases that we see in the medical system when people start to present with symptoms actually reflect transmission that occurred anywhere from 5 to 10 days before. So when you start seeing cases, the proverbial horse is already out of the barn in your community. And so the earlier in the process that these kind of incredibly difficult, we really do recognize how painful, both personally but also as a society, these interventions are. But when you intervene early, you have a much, much larger impact down the road in the total number of cases. If you can decrease the amount that people spread the disease to each other by 50% early in the transmission cycle, you have a much greater impact, 100-fold, later in the pandemic. And that's why it's so important for communities, even those, and perhaps especially those who don't have active cases currently or think they don't, to recognize how important that is. Because if you can stop transmission when there are only a few cases, you can avoid a lot of what we're trying very hard to prevent, which is an overwhelmed healthcare system and additional death.
Well, you bring up a very good point. California coronavirus cases are doubling much faster than expected, with a surge likely on the way. So from what you're hearing from your former colleagues, perhaps at the state level and the local jurisdictions, is that accurate? We've heard originally it could be 6 to 7 days. Now it's doubling every 3 to 4 days.
Yes. I mean, we are, for the state as a whole, and again, it's really challenging to roll these numbers up because it's very different in different parts of the state. But overall, the state is in what we call the exponential growth phase of this pandemic, and that's where the growth has been fairly slow and now kicked really into gear, and those lines you see on the graph look like they're going straight up. What we're trying to do with these social distancing measures, in addition to still, when we find cases, ensuring isolation, is to, we want to bend that curve so that it's not pointing quite so high. We want to bring it down more to a diagonal, or eventually, hopefully, a flat line.
That's where that hashtag of flatten the curve comes from that
exactly.
We've heard so much of.
And the goal is that we are not in a place in California as a whole. We may be in some small areas of California. We're not in a place where we can stop the virus in its tracks. What we want to do is slow it down so that we can continue to have a healthcare system that's able to take care of the cases that we find and the cases who show up in hospitals, as well as protecting our healthcare workers, because we really, really need them to still be able to take care of people. It's not just people with COVID, but it's also people who have injuries and heart attacks and delivering babies and all the things that the healthcare system does on a day-to-day basis.
Senator, correct me if I'm wrong here, but your district was actually one of the first areas in California a couple of weeks ago, which again feels like months ago, to actually see the coronavirus cases as the crisis started to unfold domestically. The rest of California caught up with that part of Northern California. How's your community doing, the healthcare community there? Are the hospitals and the doctors getting what they need? Are they getting the support financially, logistically, also emotionally from the community?
Well, listen, I do believe they are, at least the support from the community emotionally. I was concerned about because of news reports that I had read and listened to on the radio or on TV that they perhaps weren't getting the resources they needed in terms of ventilators, protective equipment, and those type of things. So I took the step of calling every one of my hospitals at the top level, either the governmental affairs or the president of each one that is located in the five counties that I represent. And all of them have told me they feel like they're prepared. They're feeling like they're getting the support. I don't know if Dr. Smith is hearing different, but I felt at least comforted that inside those hospitals, they feel confident that they can meet those needs. That's not to say that it's going to be easy, but in terms of those equipment that we've been hearing about, they are starting to come in.
Is that what you hear, doctor? Respirators, hospital beds, masks, those issues of need that the medical community is having, is that starting to get matched?
I think for most places right now, yes. The challenge is going to be if we are not successful with social distancing, if restrictions are removed too soon, this will surge again. And the challenge that we have particularly, there's a lot of discussion about respirators, and that's particularly pertinent in this particular disease because on average, patients who require ventilation support with COVID are staying on a ventilator for weeks. And that means that there's an additive effect. It's not like say, pneumonia where a patient goes into an ICU for a few days, starts to get better, and comes back out. And so that is part of the planning as well, is how do you plan for a continued increase of patients who are going to stay sick for a long time. I think people are feeling pretty good right now, and it's very encouraging that the Strategic National Stockpile has finally been opened to states, and that it's a little frustrating that there is not sort of a national plan for how this is going to roll out. And I think that's developing, but at the moment it's a state by state sort of request what you need and hope you get it without a lot of sense of whether there is an overarching approach to what could potentially be rationing at the federal level, where most of the resources currently stand. Now, the good news, too, I think, is that the private sector is really stepping up to start to produce some of the things that we need, like the personal protective equipment, and in some cases, even things like ventilators. Remember, too, that the vast majority of people who get the virus have a mild disease, and that is the best news about this virus. It's
right.
Highly contagious, but it's mild in most people. And so most people can stay home and stay isolated and therefore not help build the volume of patients. But for those that do need it, it's a pretty severe disease.
Well, the CDC website breaks down a lot of the statistics by age, demographic, including the fatalities as a result of this, these terrible, unfortunate hundreds, thousands of deaths already. But this isn't always, as you point out here to some degree, this isn't always a fatal virus, thankfully.
In fact, it's not even usually a fatal virus. It's usually like having a really severe cold or influenza. You're sick, and you can be very sick for a few days, but most people recover. The challenge is in the United States, we have a lot of people who have underlying lung and heart disease, and those folks are at greater risk for requiring hospitalization. And of those that require hospitalization, of course, there's then the potential for further decompensation and needing support for breathing. And that's the area where we have the least overall, under normal circumstances, the least ability to surge the healthcare system because it can be very complicated to take care of patients like that, and it does require some advanced technology. So that's the sort of place where we're really trying to focus, as well as public health sector, which I work in predominantly, is also focusing on making sure that we're doing the right things in the community to decrease the transition and the creation of new cases of COVID.
Some headlines from this past week as we speak. New York's coronavirus outbreak has erupted violently, and the reports are that New York State has 10 times the COVID-19 cases that California has. Why is that? Did we jump on this early enough and aggressively enough as a state to save our state from a similar fate?
Well, we don't know. And one of the challenges that we have with the numbers is that all of these numbers are estimates. We haven't had the ability to do any surveillance testing, surveillance where we go out into a community and we don't just test the people who have symptoms, but we test everybody. If you do that, you have a sense for how many cases there are in the community and how the rate at which transmission is ongoing. We lack that in the United States, and that is a huge deficit in terms of our ability to really say. New York is very different than California. California, while we are larger in terms of the number of people, we're also relatively spread out. And we have very distinct communities, some of which are in a position to still be doing containment, isolating cases as they're identified and then quarantining contacts. In those communities, you can really have a significant impact if you do that aggressively and prevent them from really going down the road of this kind of exponential growth that we're seeing. In New York is much denser, and in particular New York City. We don't have, with the exception of some areas of Los Angeles, for example, Sandy, we don't really have metropolises like New York City where there are a lot of people in the same space, a lot more use of mass transit than we have in California. So that kind of setting, and a lot of people who use the same number of facilities, whether it's grocery stores, et cetera. So overall density can have an impact. New York is also an area where there's a lot of travel back and forth from Europe. So in California, in Santa Clara County has one of the largest mainland Chinese expatriate communities. And we postulate that that's one of the reasons that we saw transmission early in Santa Clara County. If you look at New York, they have much more tourism, but also business travel back and forth from Europe and places like Italy. And so it's possible that, and in fact, it's probable that transmission was ongoing in New York for quite a long time before we recognized the real potential for COVID to have an impact like we're currently seeing.
Indeed. One of the issues that we have talked about as we address this issue in California of containing and controlling and improving our statistics, flattening the curve, so to speak, is caring for California's more vulnerable communities, I guess I call it, the homeless population, the workers in the fields, even the prison population. And each one is their, if you'll pardon the crude metaphor, their own petri dish of potential disaster with this coronavirus. Senator Dodd, you and your legislative colleagues have worked in tandem with the local officials to make these communities a priority in terms of control and care.
Absolutely. And we've had a great dialogue with the administration. I believe Governor Newsom's done an outstanding job. Before we recessed, we passed a $1.1 billion emergency response package. We've deferred tax payments, waived the waiting period for unemployment benefits, and funded shelter for the homeless, and actually deployed the National Guard to help at food banks. And these are all local serving things that are helping Californians throughout every district within the state of California. And it's really important that as I look at this thing, we've just got to continue listening to our public health officials. As you look at the different media reports and hear from certain people, it's just incredible how some people are trying to talk us through to a better place. We've got to listen to our public health officials. We've got to continue to wash hands and social distance. And they may sound like small steps, but they're actually incredibly critical.
I 100% agree. And actually, to that point, let's talk about the social distancing issue, or at least the physical distancing. The entire state of California is subject to shelter in place orders from Governor Newsom. Some local jurisdictions have imposed tougher rules for staying off the streets and out of large groups in public places. Law enforcement is not out ticketing and fining people yet, but California is still on the lower end of this learning and compliance curve. And you see videos. We saw them perhaps too, especially this last weekend, of people crowding on the beaches, at the state parks, in the big city plazas. I mean, Disneyland is closed, but if you look at some of the video of these people walking down the boulevard, it looks like Main Street Disneyland on a crowded day. Doctor, I know you're not a cop, you're a doctor, but is the state going to have to toughen the restrictions before people get the message?
Well, I can't speak for the state, but I will say that I know that in local jurisdictions that are being hard hit and seeing this kind of activity going on, that conversation is happening right now. Do we tighten restrictions? How do we tighten restrictions? Where are the places where we're most vulnerable? And I think you have seen, if you look at the Bay Area, for example, that counties that originally kept parks, et cetera, open particularly are now closing them. And it's for this exact reason. Closing businesses and restricting certain types of act, that works to a point. But unless people really understand that there is a very significant risk of being within 6 feet of each other, and it doesn't matter if you're outside. This virus is incredibly contagious. It's very easy to get this virus. And we have a lovely park here in Napa, and the trails were packed with people. And that is exactly what we don't want to see happen. And so I think those conversations are ongoing, and I would anticipate that we'll start to see some tightening down of the restrictions in communities, particularly the communities where we know there's a lot of ongoing transmission. But it's equally important, as I said earlier, that those communities that are not currently seeing a lot of cases, if they do this now and do it right, and if everyone does their part, it can have a tremendous positive impact over the long haul. And they may never see the exponential growth that we're seeing in places like New York. And again, I can't speak for the state, but I know that communities are actively considering that right now.
Senator, how are the residents of the 3rd District responding to this? I don't want you to have to tattle on anyone, but if you have a beautiful district out there, I'd want to go outside and hang out too.
Well, let me tell you, it was a little bit dicey in some places at the very beginning, but I am starting to see that it is improving and hearing better reports. But I also think that's because when people do look at the news or do look at the TV and you look at the total cases, you look at the number of deaths, and all of a sudden people say, wow, our public health officials were right. We better start taking this seriously. You know, it helps that the governor puts controls and no more parking at state beaches and those type of things. But this is, clear evidence that our public officials in public health know what they're talking about. We need to listen to them, and we need to do what they say.
Let's talk, folks, about the T word, the testing and tracking for the coronavirus. It's been a huge, difficult, and complex dilemma. California has fallen behind, way behind New York, in a dangerous way in this uncoordinated patchwork attempt to get as many testing programs rolled out in the state as possible. And people are doing a yeoman's effort to try to get people tested, those who need it. But the system appears broken. One article I read called the testing fiasco the original sin of America's pandemic failure. Doctor, what's being done to resolve that issue?
Well, the challenge, I can tell you more. What everyone is trying to do is as much testing as possible. And in various communities, there are some really innovative things happening. I heard of one area where one of the fire departments is now doing some drive-through testing to help increase capacity. We have a fundamental challenge, though. Right now, there is a worldwide shortage of the materials used to collect the specimens, the swabs and the vials, et cetera. And as you increase testing, it puts pressure on that supply chain so that it can make it worse. Now, hopefully, there will be, as China comes back online and as local manufacturers begin to increase production, that may help. But then what happens is, as you increase the number of tests that are being done, the laboratories that are running those tests are suffering backlog. My understanding is that Quest Diagnostics overall has about a 5-day turnaround time for testing. And that's slow for this virus. It means the information that you have is behind. And we still, because the cases are climbing at a time when resources for testing are constrained, still don't have the capacity to go out and do that kind of surveillance work that I mentioned, which was at the heart of both how China kept cases down and how South Korea was successful in never seeing, they had a lot of cases, but they never saw the kind of exponential growth that we're seeing in places. So I don't know what the answer is, but I know that there are potential barriers at each step, from collecting the specimen to the laboratory capacity to actually run the specimens. And I think it's going to take a lot of different implementation, new strategies, new machines. There are new machines coming out, but then the kits for those have to be manufactured, and that takes time to ramp up. It will get better over time, but right now we are in a challenging situation.
Governor Newsom and his team have been on the front lines of this pandemic early on. The governor actually has become now the face, if you will, of the reporting and the updating and the stories and the news that come out of California about what we're doing. Senator, from your reaction as a lawmaker and doctor, from your reaction as a medical practitioner, how's he leading on this?
Well, from a legislative standpoint, I give him high marks. In fact, I'm very encouraged that both Republicans and Democrats in the Senate and from what I've heard in the assembly, are saying the same things. He listens to science, he listens to the public health professionals, and makes sure that before he passes anything, that it's thoroughly vetted. And I think he's been communicating with the legislature or our leadership in fine fashion. So I'm very pleased with the job that he's doing.
Yeah, I think the governor has really stepped up. I know that he has been working very hard to advocate for the state of California with the federal government, and I'm quite sure those are not conversations that are necessarily always pleasant, but he's been successful in getting shipments of vital material to California. I also applaud him for having taken the step of, in a very large state, imposing his order for social distancing. I think that was an incredibly important step for the state. And as Senator Dodd says, most important to me is that he's listening to the science. And not all politicians do that. There are a lot of pressures. I can't begin to imagine the pressures for making these decisions at a statewide level and the number of very important people who are probably advocating on a daily, if not hourly, basis for changes. He is sticking to his guns and following the science, and that we really appreciate.
Doctor, is this going to get worse before it gets better? And when does this end? That may be the million-dollar unanswerable question. This thing could linger as a part of our lives for at least a year, if not longer, and it may be part of our lives to some degree for a long time. What do you think?
I think that that is true. I think when does this end varies from place to place. The virus itself is not going to go away, even if it retreats into the background. What's going to be really important is, as communities do bend the curve, as we start to see cases start to decrease, that we not lose our fortitude too early. If you remove some of the restrictions too early, what you will see is outbreaks occurring. What we need to do is we need to be able to maintain, and this is particularly important given how chronically underfunded public health is, particularly at the local level, and that includes in California. We need the public health capacity to shift back into containment, which is, once people begin to go back to normal, we have to be able to find cases rapidly, isolate those cases, identify contacts, and put those contacts in quarantine. That's how you stop it from starting to create larger outbreaks again, outbreaks in healthcare facilities, in congregate settings among the homeless, et cetera. We will need to be very aggressive, even at times when the general public is feeling like things are much better.
Doctor, considering everything that we've talked about and some of your positive perspective on this, you and your colleagues, did you guys see this coming?
In the long term, yes. We've been planning for pandemics, you know, whether it's influenza or other viruses, for many years. My first influenza pandemic planning was back in the late 1980s. After SARS and after the bioterrorism, we have been creating very explicit plans. And many of the social distancing types of interventions that you see were developed in those times. I don't think most of us who were involved in those planning efforts thought we would really need to implement them in our working lifetimes, but we always knew it was a possibility. From the time this virus started circulating in Wuhan, the earliest circulation, those of us who've been involved in this kind of planning, and it's been a big part of my career, were immediately believed that this could happen, that it could just be, that it could be as bad as it is. In some ways, because of early intervention in some countries, it's not as bad as we thought it could be. But we are by no means out of the woods. We are just getting into, in the United States, the really rapid growth phase of this. And how well we do is going to depend on the degree to which we can, as a society and as individuals, maintain our fortitude in the face of the really painful restrictions that we're having to put in place.
Doctor, I'm going to use that hopeful note that you've just given us there as a final question to you both to put a further positive perspective on this otherwise desperate and sad story. If we have learned nothing in all of this, it's been made clear to us that we are a global community and that these types of changes, this destruction and this deep pain to our world can often bring out the better angels of our nature. Senator, let me just ask you, concluding, how have you seen that playing out in your own communities? I'm sure you've heard stories from your legislative colleagues who are in their own districts, some inspiring, tender mercies that have come out of the destruction and the tragedy of just the last few weeks.
Well, it is. I think we've got to start with our medical community, these people that are trained professionals in medicine and health. And I really believe that they're gearing up everywhere, the ones where they do have a lot of case lows, like down in Santa Clara County. You hear about things where they're coming back in and taking care of their families, making donations. This is the American spirit that we have. We will get through this. This is something that together, again, we've weathered so much over the years, but this one, we're weathering so much more that, you know, we're one team, we're one mission, and we're one fight on this. And supporting everyone, I believe people are starting to believe that we will get there together.
Doctor, what slices of hope and strength are you hearing about from the medical world in California?
Well, I agree with Senator Dodd. You know, after SARS, people did surveys of healthcare workers saying, would you go to work? And you would see headlines like 60% say they wouldn't. It's absolutely not true. When the real thing is happening, people are going to work, irrespective of the challenge to their families, and that's really inspiring. But also, you see a lot of individual people really stepping out, figuratively. People going to check on their isolated neighbors, you know, from a safe 6-foot distance. Is there anything we can get you? Do you need help? That spirit really, really will make a difference.
Thank you for sharing that. There's so many other questions I could ask you about having you both here, but I know you have to move on with your day. Thank you, Senator Dodd and Dr. Smith, for your transparency and clarity in this conversation and for your efforts and courage in your respective worlds of work right now. Senator Dodd, thank you for bringing Dr. Smith along with you here, and I look forward to seeing you and your colleagues back in the Capitol as soon as possible. And, Doctor, good luck with your outreach and counsel to California's health centers and workers. So, Senator Dodd and Dr. Smith, thank you both for being on Then There's California.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen.
That wraps up this edition of Then There's California. We are proud to have technical and production assistance and great ideas from Martin Ashley, Bob Brulte, Brian Shadden and Rainier Savignano, Gunjan Patel, John Roman, McLena Woods, Lisa Murphy, Blake Hooper, and the graphic design talents of Tim Davis. On behalf of California State Senator Bill Dodd from Napa County, California, in the 3rd Senate District, and Dr. Smith, MD, also calling us by phone from Napa County, stay safe, everyone. I'm Brian Green from the State Capitol in Sacramento. Thanks for listening to Then There's California.